Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager for the most hockey ever. It is available today. Yes, new for this season for Franchise Hockey Manager 4. So much great stuff. You've obviously got the Vegas Golden Knights. They're brand new for the season, and you can take them as they have been constructed, or you can redo the expansion draft with Vegas and build them however you like to. You've got complete customization to create your own hockey universe with flexible league structures, teams, schedules, you name it. There's a tremendous amount of new gameplay features. There's just everything is better this year in Franchise Hockey Manager 4 with improved stat tracking and record tracking, all new line chemistry, new single game records, so much more. And you have got the complete history of the NHL. Every single season ever in the history of the NHL is playable. And every franchise has an all new historical challenge where you can try to duplicate or better every NHL franchise's greatest accomplishments. We are incredibly proud of Franchise Hockey Manager 4, and you can get it today on Steam for a 10% discount. So just go look for Franchise Hockey Manager 4 on Steam. You can get it today for a 10% discount, but that will not last long. That'll get you the game for $35.99. And of course, you can get it from the website ootpdevelopments.com. Franchise Hockey Manager 4, the most hockey ever, available today on PC and Mac. We're also very proud here at the Press Row Podcast to announce our strategic partnership with the great guys at Gamer Saloon. Gamer Saloon is where gamers play for real money. You can create a challenge, you can look for open challenges, you can challenge players that are online right now in the shout box, or you can do what we've done here too at the Press Row Podcast, which is you can create your own tournaments against your friends, and you can play them, and you can win some bragging rights and win a little bit of money. In fact, this weekend, if you're around, you should catch some of the live streams. A bunch of us Press Row Podcast guys are playing in an MLB The Show tournament. You got me, you got Pasta Padre, you got Snaggle J, you got that sports gamer. I'm going to win his money. We're all playing at a Gamer Saloon tournament this weekend for MLB The Show. And we're going to keep on doing it because it's a whole heck of a lot of fun. We're already playing these games anyway, and now we're just able to play for a little bit more stakes. It's a lot of fun. It's gamersaloon.com/pressrow is where you want to go because we want you to download that app. We want you to sign up. And if you do sign up and use that code PRESSROW, guess what? You're going to get a 50% bonus to your initial deposit. So if you put in $20, you're going to get an extra $10 for free. You put in $50, you get an extra $25. Up to $100, they're going to match you. That's gamersaloon.com/pressrow. We want you to go there, download the app, sign up, and get playing. And hey, who knows? Maybe you can play against us. We can have some fun as well. So gamersaloon.com/pressrow. Go check it out. Support the Press Row Podcast. Support Gamer Saloon. And enjoy the show.
It's the best time of the year to be a sports gaming fan. Almost every single title for 2017 just released within a packed 5-week window. But that also has created a dilemma. There's just not enough time to spend playing them all, and financial considerations are there as well. So in this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast, we're going to summarize kind of all the games that are now available, and we're going to help you maybe determine which ones you should prioritize above others, because those are decisions we've also had to make. I'm your host, Brian Weed, Pasta Padre, and with me as usual is Rich Grisham, but we've also got a special guest for this episode. It's Matthew Cato from Game Informer. Matt, it's been quite a ride from the release of Madden 18 in late August through the release of FIFA 18 at the end of September and Forza 7 now in the early October. So thank you for coming on. You know, give us your just overview of this sports season, because I know you've been really busy doing reviews just like I have.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks very much for having me on. You know, you're exactly right. That timeline, you know, in some ways is great because we've just been busy and, you know, had a lot of work and got to play a lot of great games. But man, is it just grueling. I mean, it's almost, I call it hot boxing, you know, I'm just going from one review to the next. You know, luckily, you know, kind of a privileged position, but I've been managed to, with my time, kind of get to play most of them in the sense that, you know, go from review to review. But, you know, I would say, you know, like for EA in a general overall sense, it's funny, I was thinking the other day that, you know, EA, they've hit it, you know, with some of their story modes or some of the, you know, like Ultimate Team or focusing on some other things, but it's like career mode, you know, whether it be Madden or whether it be FIFA, seems to be one of those things for them that has kind of just been left and not really touched this year. So, you know, kind of starting out, I would say that's the one thing that kind of pops into my head.
Yeah. You know, you brought it up there, or we kind of did together, this whole idea of we have compressed within this very small window so many sports games. And this is something we've talked about on the podcast a few times, Rich and I have, and others, is this release schedule and whether it's harming the potential success of games, because eventually you do have to prioritize. Even as a big sports fan, I can't buy every game. You know, I can't play them all extensively. And you see sales for a lot of these games going down. Now they're compensating with digital revenue, but do you feel like it's hurting any of these games to be mixed in kind of with all the others at the same point of the year?
I would think so. You know, I think, you know, people who are really hardcore, you know, maybe you have your eye on getting them all, but let's say even if you're into a lot of these sports, I mean, if you're talking FIFA and PES, if you're talking two NBA games, you know, multiple racing games, you're just naturally going to make choices, whether it be defaulting to one that is traditionally your favorite, you know, like, oh, I play FIFA all the time, so I'll just, even though I've heard PES is good, I'll get FIFA, you know, or going down to your more sort of average or even casual sports person where they're just going to look at that slate and they're just going to pick one, or they're going to tell mom, dad, or, you know, whoever to, you know, for Christmas to just get them one. And so something's got to suffer.
Rich Grisham, welcome back. As we're talking about, you know, balancing our time between different games, what have you been playing recently out of all these releases?
Well, a few things. Number one, this was the week that Forza 7 was released, so I picked that up. And my friend Brian Weedy taught me the only way to buy games is to get them through Amazon Prime because you get the big discount.
Yeah.
So I did that. I pre-ordered Forza 7 several months ago, and then it got here. And this is the regular Forza 7, not the super-duper expensive one, you get early. This is just the regular one.
Yeah, you had to wait. It's the one they make you wait.
Well, you know, I had to wait. I'm playing 100 other things. So, like, yeah technically I had to wait, but trust me, I wasn't waiting. There was plenty of other stuff. So I picked it up and installed it, and 3 days later, when it was done installing, I was able to start playing it.
Yeah.
And I mean, all kidding aside, that was a long install.
96 gigs.
A crazy amount. Yeah. And so what happened was I played a few races and it was cool. You know, I barely started. I got like two or three races in, barely started the career mode, and then had to go to bed. And then tonight I get home and I'm ready to play some more Forza before coming on the show. And lo and behold, it just crashes. It doesn't even load. And I'm like, okay, something. I just need to reboot my Xbox One. I reboot my Xbox One, and it still crashes. And I'm like, well, what the heck is going on? And then I do a quick Google search, and it looks like this is a problem affecting a whole lot of people right now. So as of right now, I wanted to be playing Forza 7, but can't. So that's a little frustrating. But other than that, prior to Forza 7 showing up, my two games that I've been playing the most are. What have I been playing? NHL and on the treadmill, and Pro Evo on the treadmill. So those are the two games that I've been spending the most time with. It's actually normally when I play on the treadmill, I will do like one or two games of the same, right? So two NHL in a row or two Pro Evos in a row or something. But I found that the NHL games, the way that I play them, take a little longer. So like it's hard to get in two full games before my workout is done. So what I'm actually doing now is playing one NHL game and then one Pro Evo game. And I got a couple franchises going. Like I got my Oilers franchise going with the NHL, and then I got my Everton franchise, or you know, whatever they call it, in Master League with Pro Evo. So that's really what's been occupying the most of my time. Big fan of both of those games this year. It's been a few years since NHL has done anything for me, and I don't think there's anything I can call out of this year's NHL significantly that is, you know, a reason why I'm playing it more. It's just I probably haven't played it that much, really, and it's just kind of nice to be back into playing some hockey. That's really what has been occupying the bulk of my time. We're also playing a little bit of Madden in our online league, and I'm doing okay. I'm 2-3 in our league right now.
And this actually week coming up is the first week that I have a non-human game. So it's my first CPU game. So I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to win and get back to 500. So that's what I've been up to.
So, Rich, is there a game you would be playing more of right now if you had more time for it?
You know, if I had more time, I would really want to probably be playing more FIFA because I really love Pro Evo. I'm enjoying this year's very much. Cat Bailey, our great friend Cat Bailey, just wounded me today so badly when she published on U.S. Gamer the article about how FIFA is better than Pro Evo. I totally get what she's talking about in the article, which I recommend everybody read because it's very well put together, very well researched, and very accurate. She's just also completely wrong in every single way.
Well, so we can have that debate right now a little bit, Rich, because Matt, I know you reviewed both soccer games. I reviewed both soccer games. Rich, you've played both in limited fashion at the very least.
Yep.
So it's interesting as far as which game would you prefer of the two, because last year I would have said Pro Evolution. This year I lean towards FIFA, Rich. And it's not because of gameplay. It's actually, despite the gameplay, I think, you know, Pro Evolutions is more refined. But FIFA's just got kind of the whole package going for it, from the licenses to story mode. You know, the journey is really good for its second year. Career mode, they've got a few decent additions in there. And then the online suite of features is just immensely better in FIFA.
I totally get that, but I still have a lot more fun playing Pro Evo than I do FIFA.
Right.
The game is better and the controls are better. And I'm not knocking FIFA. I've played me some FIFA and I like it. And I just answered your question with what would I be playing more? Like, I don't want to play less Pro Evo, but I do want to be playing more FIFA. In a lot of ways, it's really good. However, it remains to me an inferior game on the field. Not a bad game on the field, but an inferior game on the field. And the way that I play, that's important to me. I'm not going to not play FIFA, but there's no way that I'm going to say, well, other than actually playing the game, everything else is better. I mean, I'll say that, but that doesn't equate to I think FIFA is the better experience.
Right.
I
don't. It's dependent on where you put your time. Matt, you reviewed both games. You gave both of them the same score, but I'm sure for distinctly different reasons. Give us your breakdown of the two soccer games and where you kind of stand on which one you, if you have a preference, which one it is.
Well, I would definitely agree with Rich in the gameplay department. I think, you know, I'll start out with what sounds like a pretty big blow to FIFA, in the sense that when I'm playing FIFA, I generally wish I was actually playing PES. And it's, there's kind of like a, I want to say like a filter or a slight delay in kind of how I play FIFA, in the sense that I'm usually sort of processing like a half a second behind because I'm just thinking a little bit more. And I'm, you know, very familiar with the controls for both, but it's just, I have to run things through a little bit differently than when I play PES, where it just feels a little bit more natural. So when I play FIFA, I usually kind of think in a gameplay sense, you know, like, oh, I wish I was actually playing PES. But, you know, certainly like you mentioned, the journey, the second season, I really like that. And I even liked, I wasn't really expecting to like the new squad battles in Ultimate Team. I'm not a huge FIFA Ultimate Team guy, but I did like, you know, I think in my review, I even compared it to Madden in a sense that, or contrasted it, where it's like, you know, Madden Ultimate Team, to do the solo challenges, you're having to do crazy stuff like, okay, you know, gain 80 yards in two passes or something like that. Whereas the squad battles in FUT, I kind of liked how you were just kind of playing normal games, which sounds kind of boring, but I did find that they were challenging without being ridiculously challenging to get, you know, to get my coins and stuff. So, you know, certainly with the modes, FIFA has the advantage. But in general, since I'm generally a pretty big career guy and I love Master League, or I play a lot of Master League, you know, as Rich alluded to, it's that game in, game out sort of feel when you're in on it and you're going to be playing a lot of games. It's that gameplay that puts PES over FIFA. But you're right. I did score them the same, but it's, you know, looking at the whole, it is for different reasons.
Yeah, you know, when I reviewed them, I gave them the same score, but as you just said, it is for very different reasons, and it's because, you know, if I was looking at, if somebody said, which game would you recommend, I think the easier game to recommend is FIFA, just because it's got a wider range of features, a wider, you know, more varied ways to play that are all fairly satisfying, and the licensing is a big deal. You know, it's a hurdle that Pro Evolution has to get over every year to convince people that, yeah, you know, you don't worry about the licenses too much. We've got, you know, we've gone all in with a few clubs, but we're missing some. You can download those on PS4. Can't do it on Xbox One. So, you know, it's Pro Evolution for a very dedicated, sim-minded, you know, fan of the sport. I think, yeah, it delivers there. But for the more casual crowd, and that's probably by design by EA Sports, I would think. I mean, it's the biggest selling sports game in the world. They have to play to different audiences and try and satisfy different types of people in as many ways as possible. They're selling like 15 million copies. So it's necessary.
Hey, everybody, we're going to take just a minute here to thank our great partners at Gamer Saloon. You love Press Row Podcast. We do too. We love making it. And Gamer Saloon is a big reason why we're going to be able to keep making it. These guys have really got a cool thing going on. Basically, all you have to do is this. You go to gamersaloon.com/pressrow and you register, and you can play in all sorts of different tournaments for real money. These guys have been around for over 10 years. They've awarded millions of dollars in prizes, and they've got all sorts of tournaments of all your favorite games. FIFA, Madden, NHL, Rocket League, Call of Duty, Counter-Strike, Injustice. These are all sorts of games that you can play. There's really no limit to the games that you can play. And you can play just one-on-one versus somebody, or you can play in team tournaments, or you can set up tournaments with your friends, which is what we're doing this weekend. All of us at the Press Row Podcast, myself, Pasta, Snaggle, TJ, and others, we all went to gamersaloon.com/pressrow, and we downloaded the app. And when we created our account, deposited money, we got an extra 50%. So I put in $20, and I got an extra $10. So now I got $30 in my account. And I'm going to make that account bigger because I'm going to win that tournament this weekend and take Pasta and Snaggle and TJ's money. So that's what we ask you to do. Support the Press Row Podcast and have some fun playing against your friends, win a little money. Just go to gamersaloon.com/pressrow today, download the app, create an account, deposit a little bit of money, and you'll get a 50% bonus. So just like me, you put in $20, you get an extra 10, you got 30. You put in $50, you get an extra 25, you got 75. Up to $100, they'll match you 50%. So gamersaloon.com/pressrow. Go there today, register, log in, download the app, help the Press Row Podcast, and have some fun.
So Matt, as far as the licensing goes, how big of a deal do you feel like that is for consumers? Because Pro Evolution's strong in some territories across the globe. FIFA dominates many more, though. Do you feel like that's a big reason why FIFA is kind of the default option people have when they're looking at a soccer game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like we're saying, what's the name? It's FIFA. FIFA, you know, for good or for bad, is, you know, is a name and has a name, and you know, not many people might not follow, you know, world organizational soccer politics, but I mean, like FIFA, like UEFA, is something they might recognize. You know, Pro Evo, you know, is just a name that's kind of made up, so that's like a small thing I think, you know, people with just looking at the box might pick up on. I mean, licensing is important, and I mean, I have conversations with people where they ask me, you know, oh, I know you're a big Pro Evo fan. Well, I always mean to get it, but, you know, is it really good this year? Should I really get it over FIFA? And I say, you know, how much I enjoy the gameplay. And then, you know, you go through this list of questions. You're like, okay, are you going to play on PS4? Because if you are, then you can get, you know, you can get some extra licenses. You can get the real kits by downloading this. And I'm talking about telling them how to format their USB on the PS4, and, you know, yeah. You can get this file, and it's a RAR file, and, you know, I'm going through these steps, and I keep going back to, like, no, but I really love the game. I think you should really get it, but I have to go through this checklist of, like, are you willing to do steps 1 through 10 as I exactly explain them to you in order to get, you know, all the real kits and, you know, get the Bundesliga teams and all that sort of stuff. So it's, you know, I mean, that's a gauntlet right there.
Rich, do you feel like there's a way Konami can get past that and grow Pro Evo more so than it has in recent years?
I don't know. What I hope is what I've heard in the past from different sources is that it's a profitable game, and that by it being profitable, it continues to get made. The gap in sales is so massive, and the marketing muscle and distribution reach of Electronic Arts so much bigger than that of Konami, that I don't even think that's a conversation that can be held. To me, it remains, if it's profitable and profitable enough, not like a little over break even profitable, as if it remains profitable to where it's worthwhile, I think that's the only thing that matters for it to continue to get made. I know the licenses are a big deal. I know the menus are a big deal. If they could, and maybe, you know, we all know that, you know, making these games, it's always a matter of priorities. You know, what is the leadership prioritize as the most important? And yes, those menus are functional, utilitarian at best, right? But I've not been a huge international soccer fan my whole life. I've only really been paying attention to it for the last 5 or 6 years at a club level, especially. And I'm able to get Master League, and I'm able to scout, and I'm able to sign players, and I'm able to do deals, and I'm able to do all sorts of stuff. So the menus, yes, they may not be slick, but they're functional, right? They work. The licenses is, I just don't foresee a situation where they're ever going to come close to what EA has done. And I wonder whether it's a sound strategy to get, you know, the 5 or the 10 clubs that they do get. I don't know. It's so complicated and complex. But my biggest thing with Pro Evo is Konami, we know, has basically divested itself of the traditional video game space. They haven't let Pro Evo go the way of basically every single one of their other console properties. So that tells me that there's something there economically that makes the game worthwhile to continue and to invest in. So to me, that's the most important thing.
You know, one of the things that you just mentioned about sort of a piecemeal approach to licenses, you know, while they certainly have like the Champions League and they do have, you know, a bunch of names and stuff in there, like it is good this year to see them and in past couple years to see them strike these little deals with this team and that team, you know, and they're talking about AC Milan and whatnot. But I wonder if there's kind of a small hidden danger where it's like, if you're not keeping up minutely with what teams are in there, you're going to forget that, for instance, Man United was in last year's game, in some previous games, but not in this year's game. So if they have AC Milan for this year and that's a big deal for them, or Fulham, you know, they're not talking how long those deals are for. So like next year is something like Fulham, or like I said, AC Milan or whoever, are they going to be out? And so is it going to be, you know, a real minute sort of turning of a licensing screw that maybe your average person, you know, isn't going to keep up with. So that's, you know, while it's good they're getting those little licenses here and there, I wonder if that's kind of from year to year, it's just going to confuse people.
You know, I think the bigger concern, frankly, with Pro Evo is something that I'm much more aware of this year. When I turned on FIFA, this is exactly what happened, right? So when I finally got Pro Evo and I had the time to sit down and start to play it, and then I went and I downloaded the kits and I started uploading the kits. So that takes a while for the Premier League anyway. So then I flipped over to FIFA, which is like literally the last thing that Pro Evo would want you to do. It's like, wait, oh, you're loading up the kits, go play FIFA. No, but that's what I did. I turned on because I Pro Evo on my PS4, so then I went to my Xbox One, loaded up EA Access, started playing FIFA. I loaded up FIFA, and I went to just go play a game, you know, the live game, and they had Everton, that's my club, they had them playing against Burnley. That was the game coming up that week. And so I just said, yeah, sure, I'll play it. And they had the up-to-the-second correct rosters, and they had, like, who's hot, and they had Omar Niasse, who is the Everton striker who had scored 2 goals including a late game winner the week before. And they mention that, you know, when I'm loading the game and when they, you know, the menus are, or, you know, you're doing the player setup, you know, for the club and you're doing all that, like it's telling you all of this stuff. I'm like, wow, that's really impressive. It's like up to the second, you know, this just happened a couple of days ago. And then I played that game and then I started a franchise, or not franchise, but, you know, I started the career season and they're like, do you want to use the rosters as of, you know, 20 minutes ago? I'm like, yes. And they have like up to the day rosters in FIFA and everything just feels very current, very now. With Pro Evo, I got nothing like that. The rosters are not updated with the stuff from the transfer window from the summer. Like when I loaded up Everton on FIFA, Romelu Lukaku was gone to Manchester United. When I load up Pro Evo, Romelu Lukaku is right there on Everton. So I'm like, all right, I'll just start my Master League and keep, you know, Lukaku and a couple of the other guys who have been transferred. So the fact that they're, you know, the same day I'm starting both of these games, one FIFA being so much better reflecting reality and reflecting the summer transfer window, which is a big deal, is another thing. And again, doesn't take away my love for Pro Evo, but that's something that, you know, soccer aficionados know a lot about. And that's definitely another thing that they have to battle. And they haven't done a great job with timeliness of roster updates for the last 2 years. And that's a big thing.
All right. So, Matt, just like let's go back to the big picture here. What was there a certain game, or it could even just be a feature that kind of stood out to you, maybe surprised you, or kind of just pops from this last, you know, all these games that just recently came out?
You know, I think, you know, EA's with the story modes. I liked the long shot. It wasn't, you know, obviously the gameplay and playing it wasn't a big deal, but I thought that was pretty well done. I was kind of I don't want to say hesitant, but I wanted to really like the FIFA the new season Hunter Returns in FIFA, but I had some questions before I played it. And even though it, you know, like one of the things was I was always curious at how much choice you're going to have to, let's say, like engineer a transfer, and how much like league flavor is going to be. Are managers finally going to talk? And none of that stuff really came to pass. And yet I still enjoyed the story. And, you know, not to go into any spoilers, but, you know, the father from the last one, while it was a backdrop and I preferred it that way, I didn't, you know, really care about my interactions with him. And yet him being in Hunter Returns is actually better than I thought it would be. So I'd say that. And then I guess maybe kind of on a flip side a little bit, you know, I played a little bit of 2K18 and seeing, you know, I wouldn't say I played a lot, but seeing on one hand, seeing the GM stuff with some of the kind of the owner's son and stuff like that, I thought that was kind of a cool way to do that, even though it, you know, it may sound kind of crazy. And then I guess I was a little disappointed in the neighborhood in the sense that, you know, once you get out into the environment, like, oh, this is pretty cool. I can, you know, here's my building. Here's the Foot Locker. It got old pretty quickly for me just kind of running around that environment, you know, and it didn't take long for me just to be like, I wish I could, you know, gee, if only there was a way I could dive into a quick menu and just get there. And maybe that's just a, you know, jaded gamer in me or whatnot. But I was a little surprised that that didn't catch me as much as I thought it might.
Yeah, you know, when they rolled that feature out or first introduced it, they made a big deal out of it. I believe they said something to the effect of, this will change sports gaming forever. And I don't think that's true. I mean, it was basically just bringing life to what had previously been done in menus, which is conceptually, it's not a bad goal to have. But when I started timing things and saying, okay, it takes me over 2 minutes to get from the My Court to the barber shop. And then you still have to deal with loading into the barber shop. So it's like, why are you wasting my time to do all this? It's essentially a storefront, right, Rich? They're putting these stores up. They want you to walk by them and be like, oh, the Foot Locker. I should go in there and spend money on shoes.
Of course, with the way that retail is going these days, you'd think they would just let you sit in your apartment and go to Amazon.
Yeah, just order it all online. Yes.
Now that's, you know, that's what they're doing. And, you know, there hasn't been a change since last week. I still haven't gotten NBA 2K. I'm still not feeling the basketball. We're still 2 weeks plus away from the start of the regular season. You know, it's football season. It's baseball season. I'm just not feeling NBA 2K. And even when I do get it, which I will, I'm sure, at some point in the not terribly distant future, you know, just like most, just, I'm going to sound like such an old man, just like most of these kinds of experiences, this is not my thing. I get it. I completely understand it. I know they're wildly popular, but I'm not the kind of guy who's going to ever be doing that. But I am in the minority. You know, there's all millions and millions and millions of people playing NBA 2K that are playing NBA 2K as a single player, massively, you know, single player game in a massively multiplayer world. And they're playing it in a sandbox that is a product of Take-Two Sports, which with their Grand Theft Auto franchise and Red Dead franchise knows so much about how to get people to want to live in these environments. So they're brilliant. It's just not me, but I've been playing these sports games for far too long to basically just get out of my way, which is I'm going to play a franchise or I'm going to play against my friends.
Hey everybody, we're going to take a quick break just to let you know that support for today's show comes from Audible. Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, and business information providers. Unlike a streaming or rental service, with Audible, you own your books, so you can access them anytime, anywhere, from almost any device, including your iPhone, iPad, Android, Amazon Fire tablets, or Windows Phone. Audible makes getting more books in your life easy. They have an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, incredible performances. Transform your commute and ride with Audible. I drive all the time. I commute a lot back and forth for in 1 hour each way trips. So Audible is great. I heard a fantastic book. It is Satchel, The Life and Times of an American Legend. I got it through Audible. It's written by Larry Tyne. It's narrated by Dominic Hoffman. And it's fantastic. Satchel Paige is a fascinating, fascinating character. And that's a book that I would recommend that you go check out. And if you today go to www.audible.com/pressrow, you can get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial. It's fantastic, and it helps support the Press Row podcast. We would not be able to do what we do without great support from you guys, the listeners, and this is another way to do it. That's www.audible.com/pressrow, P-R-E-S-S-R-O-W, for a free audiobook with your 30-day trial. Check it out. You got nothing to lose. You got everything to gain. Audible is a terrific service, and I'm really excited that they're the sponsor of this week's episode.
So we're kind of on the microtransaction thing here. So let's discuss that. Rich and I have talked about this extensively the last couple episodes, Matt, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because the effect that microtransactions have had or monetization has had on the NBA 2K series is really kind of extreme. And what you've seen this year is NBA 2K18 now has... It's now the lowest scored game by Metacritic in a decade in that series since NBA 2K8. So, and the main, almost sole reason for that is backlash to the microtransactions. And it's not that they're trying to make money. We always have this discussion that publishers have to make money, and that if they're successful, that's when you end up getting games, or else they're going to disappear, and then that's when you get improvements to games, and they continue to build, and they invest that money back into the games. But what you've seen with NBA 2K is that it kind of taken over the way the game is designed, and it forces you into situations where you feel like you have to spend money to simply have fun. And then I was looking at Forza 7 reviews, which started out really high. It was sitting in the low 90s, and now as people discovered Forza 7 has a loot box system, and there is plans already coming down in the near future where they're going to bring money into that. The scores have dropped even more down to I think it's at 87 right now. So there seems to be a backlash or recognition of this monetization effect on these games happening this year that it hasn't happened in recent years, even as these things were occurring already. You know, what are your thoughts on the way these publishers are trying to make money? And then why is it now that people are becoming kind of conscious of and standing up to it in a sense, both consumers and more so even than reviewers?
Well, I think in the case of Forza, you know, with the prize crates, I've seen, I actually have a question into Microsoft to find out exactly the answer, whether there are any cars that can only be gotten through the prize crates. There seems to be some conflicting information on that one. In my experience, I haven't definitively found out either way. But I think, you know, with the randomness and some of that, I think that, you know, people, it's not that they wouldn't necessarily not want to pay some money for a crate or whatever. But I think, like, for instance, with the mods in those prize crates in Forza 7, those mods used to be available just when you would level up your driver level. Mm-hmm. Now the only way to get mods is through the crates, you know, which are random and stuff. And, you know, sure, you could sell off some ones that you don't want, but it's just that little, you know, maybe it's not just the microtransactions in Forza case, but maybe it's the fact that they feel that the franchise, let's say over 2 years or whatnot, or 3 years, you know, maybe since Forza 4, or even since before then, that it's change and maybe taken away a feature here or taken away an option there and, you know, kind of funneled you a little bit into this. Because like you said, I mean, I think it was last year with Forza 6, they did the same thing where they said, well, we will have tokens, but it will be after launch. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't really a surprise to anybody. And in the case of, you know, 2K18, I mean, I totally agree with you, or both of you, in the sense that, A, I'm not going to sit there and grind, you know, to get my character up. That kind of lifestyle game, you know, for playing that way is not my huge thing.
Sorry, I was just going to jump in and say, as a reviewer, I had to spend money. I didn't mention this in the last show, and I kicked myself for it. I spent money. I spent $10 to make my character better so I could properly assess the game, because I couldn't tell whether I was missing layups because my guy was low rated or because there was an issue with the game. Like, I felt like I had to spend money to actually evaluate the game properly. So, I mean, that's a bad sign to me.
I've also seen kind of the reverse, where some companies, when they give you the cut, you know, if they let you review a copy of the game and they give you a code, it's the ultimate edition that has, you know, all the free stuff. And so I wonder, you know, again, wearing my tinfoil hat, the Jaded Gamer tinfoil hat, it makes you wonder if, like, well, are they doing this just so I kind of won't notice what, like, the first 10 hours of, you know, some microtransaction mode is like for your average gamer?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had that thought too in the past. Sometimes I wasn't technically reviewing at the time, but I know there are companies that would give out kind of credits to play Ultimate Team with. And I'm like, that's not really the best way to assess the consumer experience. So I think that's the case with NBA 2K also. Racing games. So you were just talking about Forza a bit there. Rich, I know you played a little bit. I've played some. I'm working towards a review on that. But I don't consider myself a racing expert. Matt, I think you probably have a better sense of the racing games than I do. So there's Forza 7, and I know you reviewed NASCAR Heat 2, which came out in the middle of September and kind of got buried by every other game. didn't see much about it. So give me your thoughts on at least NASCAR, and then maybe other than what you've already talked about, Forza so far.
Well, NASCAR, you know, that's a pretty small developer, and they're kind of taking baby steps with the license. They have the exclusive console license, so I guess they're a little comfortable there. But, you know, if last year was sort of the reintroduction of the developer Monster Games back into the NASCAR scene after being away for, geez, you know, since before EA or around EA, was making games. Their big thing was introducing like multi-series racing. So you could race trucks, you could race the Xfinity, and then you can get into sort of the big leagues with the Monster Energy races. And so fans really wanted that because that was something that developer Monster Games had done in their previous NASCAR or Heat and Dirt to Daytona series. So that was the big like on the box feature. My problem with the game was just that, you know, yes, those things are there, but they, in the career mode, they stripped out basically kind of the R&D portion of it, which, you know, yeah, you know, buying, you know, a dyno machine or buying, you know, something related to your test facilities isn't super, you know, glamorous to a lot of people, but without it, going from race to race, and yes, you can race a truck and then, you know, get into a cup car. Yes, you can do that, but it just felt really like just a calendar of races. And so you didn't get that sense while you were moving your way up in sort of the NASCAR world through the trucks and stuff in the different series. You were moving your way up, but it didn't feel like you were actually building anything because you were just literally going from like this race to that race. And it had kind of a behind the scenes thing about like, well, as you do better, you'll get a better team and they'll support you better. Therefore, you'll get a better car. But that was really behind the scenes and wasn't really apparent. So again, it just feels like you're just going through these series of races. And, you know, I mentioned Forza. I haven't done my review. I'm kind of finishing that up. But again, we kind of touched on the fact that they keep kind of tinkering with the structure. And I love the racing. I still love the racing. It's a fun game to play. Certainly the Xbox One Trigger Rumble is a huge bonus. I like the way it feels better than Project Cars 2. Which is another game that kind of got buried, as well as like F1. I would say that in general, Codemasters, with F1 and with Dirt 4, their career modes are really good this year. And it's just kind of one of those, it's kind of a small thing, and they got released earlier in the year. But, you know, until GT Sport comes out and get to play that, the Codemasters games, I think, did a really good job this year.
Rich, how do you decide what racing games to get?
History. It's with me, it's all history. I did not have a good experience with Project Cars. And so to me, especially again, considering the release window when it's coming out, Project Cars 2, no go. Will I get it or check it out at some point? Sure, it's possible, but doubtful. Versus Forza. I mean, I've played more Forza and Forza Horizon than any other racing franchise. I can't even remember, I've played plenty of other racing games, but I'm a Forza guy, and I have been since the Xbox 360 days. You know, Gran Turismo as a franchise doesn't exist anymore. I know there's a game coming out at some point soon, but, you know, I'm sorry. They release a game every 5 or 6 or 7 years. The last proper Gran Turismo got released on the PS3 after the PS4 has come out. I mean, it's just so it doesn't even exist anymore. So I'm a big I'm a big Forza guy. So that's why I pre-ordered Forza 7 and had it, you know, show up through Amazon Prime. It's with me, it's all about history, because just like everything, I love racing games, but I'm not a car guy. I know cars to a certain degree, but certainly I would not call myself an aficionado. You know, one of the big things that I've sort of read about is, you know, with Forza 7, with so many people being unhappy about their ability to get or to not get cars based upon the whole situation with Forza, you know, the makes and models and years and specs of the cars to me are just like, I don't even know what any of these things are. You know what I mean? it doesn't matter what car I get behind in Forza. It's amazing, and I have a blast driving it because, you know, as Matt said, it's just a lot of fun to race in that game. So I'm one of those weirdos who loves racing games but doesn't really get into cars so much. So with me, it's about history. What have I had fun playing in the past?
You know, just to put in real quickly, I'm actually the same way. You know, I love racing games, and I do – the vast majority of them for Game Informer, but you know, I don't pine over a certain year or certain model. So I'm with you there. I think, and you know, I guess it just brings a little different perspective, because sometimes, you know, no offense to gearheads and stuff, but you can get a little bit sort of target fixated when, like you said, if it's like, oh, well, this model's not in, or, you know, this model's a little different than it is in real life. I mean, sometimes I think you can get a little nebbish with some of that stuff.
Okay. So one question I get pretty often from people is like, what is the best game to get for somebody who's not super experienced in sports games? So what is the most accessible of the sports games? What's the easiest to learn and get familiar with and get comfortable with and enjoy? What do you think, Matt? What do you think's the best game for those type of gamers?
If I was to answer that question in a pretty general way, like you said, just like all around ease of play, because, you know, certainly if you're talking about ease of play, you know, things like stick skills with Madden are going to be a little difficult, or maybe with NBA. So I don't know, maybe you could say, you know, baseball, maybe The Show. You know, certainly it's got a variety of modes. You know, with the baseball, you know, yes, there's some stick skill in batting, certainly, or hitting the pitch meter. But, you know, maybe by taking, you know, the slower pace of it might help in that sense. I don't know. Yeah, maybe all around. Maybe that's what I would say would be the best sort of, you know, for your average, you know, person just looking for a sports game.
Yeah, you know, baseball, I think, can be a difficult one because it's punishing. You're going to fail more. It can be discouraging. You're going to fail so often, right? I like FIFA for that question, because I think they do a really good job of giving you various assists on the pitch. But you also have options like the story mode, and you have options like pro clubs where you can get on and just control one guy. I think sometimes that's the best way to learn a game, is you take the go through a mode where you're just playing as a single person, whether it's on the court in NBA 2K, playing as a single guy. It's a lot easier to just worry about your own responsibilities than a team and run plays and get into the more intricate stuff. Rich, what game do you think is the most accessible of the bunch?
Well, this year it's NBA Live. And to me, it's not even close, because it's designed, at least it feels like it to me, it's designed to be simple and accessible. And I think that's a great decision that they made. You know, you guys have, in your opinion, rightly criticized NBA Live for its franchise mode, for example. Yeah. And no one will argue that NBA Live's gameplay is as deep as NBA 2K's. No one will argue that the single player mode is as deep as NBA 2K's. Yet, I think of all of the big time sports games, that's the easiest for somebody who has some sort of a sports acumen, right? I'm not, if you're talking about someone who doesn't know sports, none of these games are going to work, right? But it's like someone who's not, you know, someone who's, you know, I like sports. Yeah, I know sports. I know basketball. I know baseball, that. But who isn't sort of a well-versed in the current console sports game world, I think NBA Live is probably the most accessible, either in team play or in single player mode. It just doesn't have the major console sports games have an expectation that you know a lot about the sport and a lot about the game before you ever boot it up. And I think NBA Live would be, if I had to say, hey, look, you just want to have a little fun, play some sports that, you know, look kind of cool on your big screen TV on a console, I'd say NBA Live.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. That one didn't come to mind, but you're right, especially if you're into the single player career mode, where they've got it called the One, and they've done it really well, because not only is it's easier to understand, you've got two different currencies that you're only earning. You aren't asked to spend money in that mode, and it's really well executed, I thought. And pretty fun to play through. Now, like you said, outside of the One, franchise mode has its issues. Ultimate Team there is kind of weak compared to their other Ultimate Teams. But yeah, I can see where NBA Live would be a good starting point for someone.
So, Matt, I have a question for you.
Sure.
You work at Game Informer. It is I don't know if it's the only video game magazine, and it's obviously it's more than a video game magazine. It's a website, you know, it's the whole environment that you have over there. But there is still a printed magazine that has pretty significant circulation, right, and is very well known. What is that like in 2017? You're like the last man standing when it comes to the magazines. What is that like in 2017? And also maybe how does that compare? Because you've been at Game Informer for quite some time. I met you, I don't know if you remember, we met briefly at an event. I don't even remember the event. It could have been a Madden event, could have been an NBA 2K event, not sure. Could have been an EA event overall. I don't know, 5-6 years ago. So you've been at this for a while. What's it like making a magazine now in the world that we're in? And how has that evolved since you first started?
Well, you know, certainly it's difficult. You know, just from a kind of a nuts and bolts perspective, as someone who does reviews or even previews for that matter, you know, it's always an issue of when you're going to get review code and how do you get, you know, how do you reconcile getting that up quickly for the online portion, but also having it somewhat timely for the review or for the magazine reviews. And, you know, when it was a lot of just magazines, you know, companies like your EAs and whatnot, they used to, you know, go by magazine deadlines. And we actually had a pretty quick one, and we still have a pretty quick one. So it always helped us. But because it was mainly, you know, magazine focused back then, getting people review code was so much longer of a lead time. And so that was, you know, that was a luxury, being able to, you know, not have to rush through playing stuff and, you know, getting this, you know, I don't want to say take your time, because I still, you know, obviously play all the modes and play the games thoroughly, but it was a little bit more time then. And so now, you know, when you're doing online reviews and magazine reviews, not only is those are sort of two different schedules, so maybe like sometimes the magazine review will come out, you know, a bit later, and that's just the way it goes. I think the other thing, you know, in general is the whole sort of streaming culture, the YouTube, the online reviews, you know, the video reviews and stuff like that. You know, I think we've all seen kind of the impact of streamers, and, you know, EA has their, I can't remember what they're called, the game changers program and stuff like that. And, you know, it's cool that those are a lot of really passionate sports people who, you know, certainly know their stuff and everything. And it's just, you know, more people talking about sports games, which I think is always good, and the kind of the high, you know, the tide rising all boats kind of analogy. But it does, you know, it does impact the way, you know, we work as a print magazine, we work as an online site and stuff, just because, you know, do companies, you know, how much do they sort of talk to, or how much do they, you know, communicate with the game changers, and sort of where do we fit in that as sort of like, quote, traditional, unquote, press, is just kind of one of those new things we're having to work with.
So you are the sports guy for Game Informer, right? Like, I don't think there's any sports game that you're not covering for Game Informer, right?
Yeah, I don't cover them all, because like 2K, which again I've played and stuff, but my colleague Matt Burtz, he does that one, and he also does NHL. I also play, you know, tons of NHL and stuff, but you know, he just takes that, and that kind of, honestly, for sanity's sake, during review time, during fall review time, that kind of helps. But I am, you know, the main sports guy, you know, pretty much. So
how do you sort of pick what to cover and what not to cover? Because there's a lot, you know. I remember when Brian and I started, you know, collaborating on this show years ago, Brian would say, I don't know what we're going to talk about in a few months. And yet there's always stuff to talk about. It doesn't matter what time of year with sports games. It's amazing to say. And it's obviously, especially now in the fall. So how do you figure out what to cover? I mean, is it a gut feel? Is it analytics based? Is it collaboration with other people? I'm just fascinated sort of how you sort of determine, with so many options, what's going to get your attention.
Oh, yeah, it's tough. You know, I mean, it is, you know, a certain amount of gut feel, You know, obviously there's the big names and stuff, and there's a pretty recognizable sort of march of, you know, kind of marketing beats. So, you know, you get a sense of when they're going to talk about stuff so you can prepare that way. But, you know, I'm doing an online column now on GameInformer.com, a couple of sports desk. And that's one of those things where it really is trying to, you know, find needles in haystacks or pick around. And, you know, there's a lot of times I'm late to coverage and stuff. Just, you know, I kind of hear what people are talking about. Oh, okay, people are talking about this game, but, you know, I miss stuff, certainly. But, you know, sometimes also, too, it's just, you know, I've combed through Steam before and just started making lists, you know, and just trying to see what's interesting. As you know, sometimes you just get solicited out of the blue, and it's kind of like, oh, you know, like I'll play a little bit of the game, let's say in early access, and you know, you kind of know it's not the world's greatest game, but it's, I like this thing about it, so I'll kind of write about that and kind of see, you know, if that strikes anything with anybody. But you're certainly right that there's, you know, year round, there's a number of things that we can write about.
Well, that's the next thing I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned it, the sports desk. So you've been doing this for a while. I don't know how long. I don't know if it's been a year. It feels like it might be around a year, although I could be wrong. But talk about what the sports desk is, why it exists, what you try to make it, what you try to make it be about, and sort of what reaction you've had from readers about it.
Well, you know, traditionally, sports games on GameInformer.com, you know, they haven't done, you know, super, super well. You know, like things like RPGs and, you know, AAA stuff is always going to do better. So, you know, that may sound kind of, it is kind of a point of weakness, starting from a point of weakness. But it was also like, you know, instead of ignoring some of those people or just saying, you know, hey, what, guys, you're just going to get the sports reviews and that's it. I wanted to kind of do a way where I could, like, talk about some more minute things about, you know, sports video games without it having been totally drowned out, in the sense that, you know, if I had to think about, well, do I write this thing about this roster updates out today? That's kind of a drop in the ocean in terms of, you know, people, your average Game Informer reader might not be interested in it. But if I could put it in, you know, more of a destination place for sports gamers or for people who are interested in other things and they can see some of this other stuff, I could bring it to their attention, but also highlight some things, just, you know, kind of A, to make a name for the column, but B, just to kind of say, hey, you know, this week I'm going to talk about, you know, this sort of topic. So it's kind of like, you know, there's a lot of great stuff, you know, Pasta Padre, I'm not just saying this, but, you know, you do great work.
Well, I hope you would say it. Thank you.
You know, and there's like, you know, Operation Sports out there, you know, and, you know, we mentioned Kat Bailey and she does a lot of good stuff and I enjoy reading her stuff. So it's, there's a lot of great sports stuff out there, but, you know, specifically for Game Informer readers, I wanted to kind of give the people interested in sports games kind of an oasis. So, you know, yes, it's not the biggest segment of our population, but I did want to give them something and give them something that they weren't getting with the way we previously used to cover sports games.
Awesome. Hey, Brian.
Yep.
Before we call it a show, I wanted to ask you if I could take just a minute to talk about something really cool that happened.
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. So I don't know if you noticed it, but this week, Out of the Park Baseball 18 was featured on the MLB Network with our postseason predictions. Mm-hmm. And on 2 days later, on Tuesday night, on the NHL Network, our brand new game that comes out as you're listening to this today, Franchise Hockey Manager 4, officially licensed by the NHL, was featured on the NHL Network with our 2017-18 season predictions. And as a guy who works for a very small company that has to do a lot of stuff that the big boys take for granted as far as trying to get our name out there and our word out there, this was an amazing couple of days. And I'm just really proud of the Out of the Park Developments team, all the guys who make Out of the Park Baseball and Franchise Hockey Manager. It's a big deal to be mentioned and featured by the two networks of the leagues that we work with. And they didn't do it, you know, like they did it because, you know, we've developed a relationship over the last few years, and we've gone through a lot to sort of, you know, prove that we can potentially be good partners of theirs. So it was a really special week. And I just wanted to say thank you to everybody out of the park, and thank you to all the fans who have played the games. Because, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, this kind of thing was unthinkable. So it was a really special week. So thank you for indulging me. But I just wanted to thank everybody associated with the games for that.
Yeah, pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. You're going Hollywood, aren't you?
No, but if I do, I will wear a suit and a tie. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. Yeah. What about a man bun? That's what you
No.
And jeans and a, like, no. Torn up T-shirt. Like most.
And I will shave. I will be clean shaven in a suit and a tie. Like my one television appearance on MLB Network about a month ago. I don't know if you noticed, Brian, suit and tie, nice shoes, clean shaven. That's how you represent yourself when you go on television.
Yeah, I know how you feel. All right. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Matthew Cato from Game Informer, gameinformer.com. It's awesome to have you on, man. I look forward to bringing you on for more shows in the future.
Yeah, thank you very much. The pleasure was all mine.
All right. So thank you, everyone out there listening. We're going to be back again next week with another episode. Appreciate you tuning in. Take care till then.